This program may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions from this broadcast are solely those of the individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Good morning. My guest today is Steve Schooner. Steve is the Nash and Sabinick Professor of Government Procurement Law and Co-Director of the Government Procurement Law Program at GW University. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Well, I've recovered from the snowstorm, so I think I have anyway.
Let's do the important stuff. How long was your drive home on Wednesday?
My drive was, and I didn't set a record, but I think I was close. It was 8.5 hours from, yeah, I left my office downtown here on 19th Street at 4:30, I got home at 1 a.m. in the morning. I could have driven to one of my favorite places, Boston, Massachusetts, in that time. So,
well, I like Boston, too, but I only had 3 hours and 15 minutes, so I don't feel so bad.
Well, you're a lucky man. From that, you could have gone to the beach, maybe Rehoboth or something, I guess, in that time. So we got that out of the way. Let's talk a little government contracts. Just last week, there was a great deal of fanfare to it in terms of the press. The president issued an executive order on improving regulation and regulatory development. I know you've had a chance to take a look at that. Can you give us your initial impressions?
Well, it's an interesting thing. It got a fair amount of play in the media, and I'm not quite sure why. On the one hand, as a legal academic, it's kind of fascinating. Because in many ways, Cass Sunstein, who's the director of OIRA, a very significant legal academic, has been relatively quiet in a number of areas since he's been in OIRA. But to some extent, this is obviously a reflection of how he views the rulemaking process and how the administration wants to address the rulemaking process for the foreseeable future. But much, much closer to home, I think that the big issue for us is whether this is going to have any impact whatsoever on the procurement process. And I think that, and we can talk about these things a little bit later, I think for two reasons, it's basically going to have no effect whatsoever. On one hand, almost everything that we see with regard to regulation and procurement isn't driven by the regulatory decision makers. It's driven by Congress. So the bottom line is Congress decides they want to change something. They basically pass a new law. They do it every year. And they basically tell the FAR Council what to do. The FAR Council does it, and then off they go. The much more complicated issue is whether this will actually change behavior. And I'm not sure that it's necessarily going to, but we can talk about that, you know, in different ways.
Yeah. Always the optimist there, Steve,
yeah, exactly.
In terms of the way things are going. Well, you know, in particular, I guess, you know, when I saw the executive order, and I guess, you know, and you may, it sounds like you're going to disagree with me on this or say that it's not a realistic possibility. But I have to tell you, and I don't know if this is just me, you know, pining for earlier days or what, but, you know, when I saw part of the language in the executive order said where they're going to have to do a retrospective analysis of existing regulations and eliminate
and get rid of all the excessively burdensome stuff.
Oh, you're okay. Going to my – yeah, that's exactly where I was going. That's the, you know, burdensome, outdated, inefficient, that's all wonderful language. It harkened back to me to, you know, and you were there. I think you were there.
Sure, National Performance Review.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I remember being at GSA in the Office of General Counsel, and we did some – you know, a fundamental review of all GSA's regulations. I can remember getting on the phone and talking to, you know, senior folks at the top at GSA at the time, like, how do we buy things better? Let's figure out some sort of prototypical new way to do things.
The fundamental difference there was a cleaner, simpler message. And the message from the top, time and time again, let's make government more businesslike. Let's find out what works in the private sector, and let's see which of those principles we can apply to the government. Now, let's also be honest. In retrospect, and you can look at the Kettle studies, the five-year studies of the NPR and the like, the only real success stories of the NPR basically had to deal with either plain language regulation, which is great, or the acquisition process. So almost all of Al Gore's big successes in the NPR were in acquisition, and there we were trying to make the government more commercial And that was relatively effective. The problem, though, was the words were great, the regs were great, the statutes were great, but the implementation was an abysmal failure, and that's a shame.
Well, yeah. I still have to tell you, at least it was exciting at the time.
Absolutely.
It was a new way of thinking and looking at the regulations. But so what I'm hearing from you is this is almost something that's checking a box and saying we're going to look at some things and sort of in the context of where we are today with, you know, budget stress, you know, the focus on contractors, we're trying to reduce costs.
But let's just stop with that just for a second. If the clear message that underlied the regulatory review was, let's save money, we can work towards that. Okay? But the problem here, unlike we just want to be more like the private sector, this is one of those I'm going to please everybody executive orders. So, for example, it specifically says, in choosing among alternative regulatory approaches, you want those that maximize net benefits. And this includes potential economic, environmental, public health and safety, and other advantages, distributive impacts, and equity. And what that means is no touching the sacred cows. And if you can't do the difficult stuff, you're not going to make any progress.
Yeah, that, I guess, I hadn't really thought of that, Steve, but you're right there. That language, I mean, I think it touches every potential stakeholder that could be impacted by regulations.
And they're not even done there. They're not even done, okay? Because where appropriate and permitted by law, each agency may consider, and again, I think it's great that they're going to qualitatively try to quantify these things, values that are difficult or impossible to quantify, including equity, human dignity, fairness, and distributive impact. Okay? That doesn't sound like an efficiency initiative to me. That sounds like we're going to make everybody happy.
And usually in the process, no one's happy in that case. In terms of procurement, so I guess, you're right when we start talking about the current era, regulation in the procurement process, I think, unlike the 90s, has been driven by Congress over the last
over the last
5 to 10 years,
and it's not just driven, it's whipped. I mean, so literally what's happening is you just get this plethora of new statutory requirements every year, and there's not even enough time to implement the regulations in a timely fashion, let alone train the people to actually make these things happen. So it's a very frustrating cycle.
Yeah, and a lot of it, I think there's an impression out there that a lot of this, the legislation is done based on anecdote, like, you're taking the worst case scenario and trying to apply it, whether it's, taking a situation out of Afghanistan or Iraq and applying
Absolutely.
It to the entire procurement system, which, I think, it's overkill, frankly. But right now we have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Steve Schooner about the executive order, the current state of procurement regulations, and where we go from here. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Almost 70 years ago, a well-known Connecticut native named Homer Cummings had a dream to start a Washington law firm devoted to working at the intersection of America's business and government. As Attorney General for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, he was an integral part of the New Deal. In 1956, Gilbert A. Cuneo joined Cummings' firm to begin what was quickly to become the largest and most successful government contract practice in the country, earning him the title, the Godfather of Government Contracts. That same firm, McKenna, Long & Aldridge, today is recognized by Chambers USA as a Tier 1 government contract law firm, continuing its preeminence in the field through its offices in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, Denver, and San Diego. With the oldest and largest government contracts practice in the United States, McKenna, Long & Aldridge still operates at the intersection of business and government. They produce solutions by working with their clients on creative and flexible strategies that ensure success. Their attorneys and professionals include former members of government, Congress, and its committees, so they know how Congress thinks and they understand how Washington works. There is no aspect of government contracts with which they are not familiar. In this uncertain economic climate, clients trust them to deliver solutions at costs that represent real value. From one new deal to another, they have remained at the forefront of government contracting. McKenna, Long & Aldridge, a name you can trust.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Steve Schooner. He's Nash & Sabinick professor of government procurement law and co-director of the government procurement law program at GW University. And we've been talking about the executive order and the procurement system, executive order on improving regulation and regulatory development. Steve, and we first session we talked a lot about that executive order and what it said or doesn't say. Let's get into the meat of it and talk a little bit about the procurement regs. From your perspective, what are some of the areas that if the goal is to really make a more efficient, less burdensome process, what are things that you think the executive branch ought to be looking at?
Well, let me give you a quick laundry list. We can talk about more of them later, but I think the one thing that you're going to see is it harkens back to what we said just a few moments ago, and that is it's all driven by congressional mandate, and frankly, almost everything that I'm going to talk about is a classic off-the-table issue. So I can tell you where I think we can make big improvements, but realistically, we're not allowed to talk about them. So let me give you a short list. We'll see if I run out of fingers. We could start with the basic rubric of...
Just a second, sure. Steve. I just thought of something. We don't have a lot of time today, but you got to come back, and maybe we just do it. We'll do it like a Dave Letterman's top 10 list and go down to your top 10. Well, I know you're going to go through some here today.
That's easier with fingers.
Yes, it is. So go ahead.
Okay, so we could start with all of what I would call the general pro-union type statutes, your Davis-Bacon Act, Service Contract Act, Successor Contract Rule, Project Labor Agreements. The bottom line is this administration isn't going to touch those, so let's take those off the table. But there could be enormous savings for the government there. The next, maybe the one thing that absorbs more regulatory implementation, more training of the procurement or acquisition workforce, more time every day in acquisition offices, and that's the subdivision of the pie through the various small business programs. Small business preferences, small disadvantaged businesses, hub zones, service-disabled veterans, women-owned businesses, Alaska Natives, and I haven't even gotten to the fact that the large prime contractors have to do subcontracting plans. The overall inefficiencies associated with this, and if we turn back to the metrics from the executive order, if we did qualitative cost comparison, if we tried to figure out whether we were getting return on investment for these programs, I think empirically you'd find you wouldn't. Let's take another one. Domestic preferences. You got the Buy American Act. How about a rule that we don't have anything in the FAR that's inconsistent with the World Trade Organization Government Procurement Agreement, which, by the way, we're a signatory to? Think about the investments and the complexities associated with specialty metals, the Berry Amendment, all of these types of domestic preferences. Again, these cost the taxpayers money. Okay, a few other quick ones. How about executive compensation? Look, if we really want to be efficient, then let's focus on outcomes rather than process. Tiny little things, and again, I'm using this as an anecdote or an example rather than one that's that significant, the drug-free workplace. It's a great idea. I understand why Congress legislates it, but the bottom line is the taxpayers are paying for a certain level of oversight that they may or may not necessarily want. All of which brings us to maybe the biggest of all of them, generally compliance regimes. Think about the recent mandatory disclosure rules. When it's all said and done, the United States government demands that its contractors spend a tremendous amount of money on attorneys, accountants, and compliance officials. And the bottom line is we pay for that, and we pay for it in higher prices, and we pay for it sometimes in slightly less efficient.
Steve, I know exactly what you're talking about. I just spent, I was at GSA for 20 years, but I spent the last 4 years at Mayor Brown advising government contractors on a host of compliance issues involving their federal contracts. So I know that there is a lot of money spent in that area. And one of my favorite ones, I think you know this, is that has always I've struggled with, is a price reduction clause in the GSA schedules program. At this point, like you say, let's be more business-like.
Is it worth the candle? What's the return on investment? So I think that the point you make about the price reductions clause is a terrific one. Now, let's do a quick analogy. Just last week, the Justice Department basically said that last year they had $4.5 billion in recoveries under the False Claims Act. That sounds like a lot of money, but let's be honest. Most of that came out of healthcare. The real question is it worth the bureaucracy that the contractors have to invest in to comply with the government rules for the returns that the government actually gets?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a, I think it's one of those things that nobody wants to step back and actually do that analysis. Because who knows what the
answer? Let's be honest. It's also very, very difficult from a congressional standpoint. Do you want a member of Congress to stand up and say, I am about permitting contractors to take advantage of the government? I am about permitting contractors to defraud the government? Of course not.
Yeah.
But frankly, what we're talking about is the margins. What the executive order talks about is basically cost-benefit analysis. What makes sense? Let's go ahead and weigh it. Now, again, I'll just give you one quick analogy here. There are some things in the executive order that are tremendously important. I hope we get a chance after our next break to talk a little bit about incentives. But one thing that they talk about is let's look at some alternatives to direct regulation. They specifically, for example, use the idea of user fees. Okay? If the American public doesn't want to pay to rebuild our roads and rebuild our bridges, then let's privatize them and we'll go to user fees. And then we'll see if the public is happier paying tolls on their major highways and going over the bridges they go over every day. My guess is they won't be happier. But frankly, a user fee is a more fair and direct redistribution of the actual costs of that transportation means.
Right.
Now, the problem is, as a nation,
well,
we don't like that. But
yeah. There's the real life examples right where I live. Like, it took me 8.5 hours to get home on Wednesday. But it's all the construction right on 495 where they're adding the hot lanes, and that's privately financed, and there will be tolls on that. I mean, that's an example of what you're talking about.
Right. I mean, look, all of these things, the one thing that I was ecstatic to hear in the State of the Union was the president talked about investing in infrastructure. So there's no question that if our government spent money on roads and bridges and all of these things, high-speed rail, I heard them mention, these are huge, huge investments. But by the same token, they pay dividends because all of us wouldn't spend as much time in our cars. We'd spend more time working or at stores spending money, which is exactly the way you get the economy going in the direction you want it to go.
Well, Steve, you know, right now, and this is a great conversation, but right now we have to take a break. When we return, we'll be talking more with Steve Schooner about the executive order, government procurement, and, you know, I think I'll ask Steve which of those sacred cows is his favorite and what he would do about it. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
What do successful small, medium, and large federal contractors, including two-thirds of the top 100, have in common? Membership in the Coalition for Government Procurement. Successful federal contractors know they get the information edge they need on developing acquisition trends and an effective voice to protect their interests from coalition membership. For nearly 30 years, the coalition's been the trusted voice of industry, working with federal officials to promote common sense procurement. Know what the best know. Join the coalition today to protect and grow your company's business. Contact the Coalition at 202-331-0975 or visit their website at thecgp.org. That's 202-331-0975 or thecgp.org. Don't be left wondering what will happen to your federal business. Contact the Coalition today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Steve Schooner, and we're talking about the recent executive order on improving regulations and regulatory development and the procurement system. Now, Steve, in the last session, you brought up some of your favorite, sacred cows.
Yeah,
I'll let you use that term. Sacred cows with regard to the procurement system. You know, I can't help but ask this question. Which one really pushes of those? I know they all push your buttons, but
which one
is at the top of your list as an issue?
Well, I think the one where you could have the most impact doing something about it would be literally just walking away from the small business infrastructure that we've created. Having said that, it's so infeasible. The idea that we could live in a world without the Small Business Administration, I realize that's untenable. So let me just talk for just a moment about some of the wage and benefit statutes. So, for example, the Davis-Bacon Act made sense many, many decades ago. But today, what Davis-Bacon, Service Contract Act, and the like basically mean is the government isn't paying market wages for the people who are working on government contracts. They're, in effect, paying union wages. If you're pro-union, that's a great thing. But there are a lot of reasons to think about the reality that the government's paying inflated wages in almost every contract that it enters into. Think about the fact that every time the government competes a major service contract, all of the people working on that contract are guaranteed at least basically the wages of the incumbent contractor. It's just not a logical way to do business. It's wonderful for the workers. In some ways, it's very beneficial for that economy. But at the end of the day, it's not a market-based solution. And in the long run, I think it's a fool's errand. But frankly, we're not going to do anything about that one in this administration either.
Right. Well, I guess that strikes me the way you put that is, does that mean it's really, you know, that follow-on contract, you know, is it really fundamentally competed if the wages are essentially going to be the same?
So if you take any hypothetical, whether it's a food service contract or custodial contract, when the competition comes up at the end of a five-year period, the only thing that's really being competed is basically management efficiency and overhead, because everyone has to pay the exact same wages. You've got successor contractor rules that basically guarantees everybody their jobs, and everyone's bidding off the same collective bargaining agreement. It's a nonsensical way to do business in a true market. If we want to talk about competition, it's not a competitive solution. But let's do something a little bit more positive.
I mean, we've talked a lot about the challenges in the process and you know, the current regulatory framework and where we see the issues and challenges. But
all right, so let's just turn to some positive things. If I was going to talk to Cass Sunstein today and I was going to say, look, you know, you've thought about all this stuff at OIRA. You've got the incredibly talented and brilliant Dan Gordon sitting right down the hall from you. What kind of big things could you really think about if you want to change the way we do business? Let me offer a simple one. Let's just rethink the way that we measure everything in procurement. The only real statistics that we have in procurement are based on award dollars, which are not correlated to outcomes. So that's ridiculous. The Federal Procurement Data System, USA Spending, all we know is what we think we're going to pay for things, and then we never correlate it with anything. That's absurd. Let's look at results. The only place where we've historically measured results, for example, is with major systems. We've only got three metrics. We have the original cost as the contract was awarded, the original schedule, and the original performance metrics. The problem is, by the time these systems get delivered, they tend to be changed. But the real question is, who cares whether that system basically comes in for the price it was agreed on if the original price was unrealistic? Let me offer two metrics that I think we should be thinking about.
Okay, I'd love to hear them.
Okay, first, let's try the word value. Did the government get value for its money? And the other one is, can we please, please, please somewhere, someday, have a conversation about customer satisfaction? There's a reason why companies like J.D. Power exist. You take your car in for service, and your car dealer hounds you for a week until you send back your customer service.
Absolutely. I get those all the time.
Survey, right?
Yep, absolutely.
Right? You go into a restaurant, and they tell you that you can win a prize by filling out a survey form. Why? They want your feedback. Government doesn't want any feedback. Government doesn't care whether the end user's happy with what was purchased for them. The real question is, are we making an effort to ensure that the government's getting what it paid for? Those are the metrics that matter: value received and customer satisfaction. And if we were to start rethinking our entire regulatory approach towards those ends, then we'd really be doing something.
Yeah, and this discussion sort of, it reminded me of a procurement I worked on back in the 90s. It's the Integrated Automated Fingerprint Identification System, major systems development program. And, you know, the customer satisfaction question, you know, part of the whole acquisition process was, you know, because it was an automated fingerprint identification system, so that if, somebody's fingerprints are taken out in, Columbus, Ohio, they could shoot them to the FBI headquarters and get a match, you know, within seconds, as opposed to putting them in the mail in 6 weeks. Well, one of the key things they did there was they had all the users as part of the overall
end-user customer
satisfaction,
right?
Part of the procurement process, developing the requirements, and ongoing in performance,
and
too.
And as you say, what's really important, get the end-users in at the requirement stage, tell them, have them tell you what's going to matter to them, and then after the fact, see if they're happy with what they got. I'll just give you one quick analogy on this. Again, we can keep banging our heads against the table over the fact that it's taken the Air Force a decade to award the in-flight refueling tanker contract. But by the same token, everybody who knows anything about major systems agrees that competitive prototypes is a solution. Why doesn't the government just take a couple billion dollars, give both of the major vendors some money, have them give us a flying prototype, fly them around for a couple years, and then ask the end users, which one do you like? And then buy that one. But no, we're going to compete on paper. There'll be unrealistic promises, and then we'll have lousy metrics after the fact, and that'll make us figure out whether we think we're happy or not. That's not relevant.
And then what happens, too, and I know you'll agree with me on this, is that, you know, after they get the thing built, they figure out, well, no, we really need it to do something else, or, you know, it doesn't do quite what we wanted to do here. So you end up with all kinds of changes, increased costs.
Right. What's the thing that we like to measure the most? We want to talk about competition. But the fascinating thing is we measure formalistic competition, how many people came to the party, rather than did competition give us a better result?
Yeah.
If we were looking at outcomes rather than process, we'd be in a much, much better place. And trust me, in the private sector, nobody is assessing and incentivizing and disincentivizing executives based on process. They're being judged on outcomes.
Outcomes, absolutely.
Okay.
You know, and it's always great to talk to you, Steve, because, you know, it goes from start on the executive order, we go to requirements, analysis, and outcomes, which is, you know, fundamentally, I think really where we ought to be as a procurement system and trying to, you know, meet the taxpayers' needs. So I really appreciate it. And I want to thank Steve Schooner for appearing on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a great time. I enjoyed it. And you will have to come back and we'll do a top 10 list on procurement issues. This is Roger Waldron. You've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Tired of playing catch up with the news? Stay informed all the time with the Federal News Flash. The Federal News Flash is a daily email from Federal News Radio that will bring you the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Find out about exclusive stories and interviews only heard on Federal News Radio. Sign up for the Federal News Flash at federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
Plan now to attend a firm's February luncheon for an in-depth look at federal cybersecurity mandates. Learn from government leaders how to safeguard our country and protect the privacy of our citizens. That's Thursday, February 17th at 11:30 a.m. at the George Washington University Marvin Center in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. W.